Recorded live at the wonderful Big Sushi Studio, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Slaughter Film.
Hello, you filthy animals. I am Corey, sliding in the home, and my pants begin to foam car. And I am accompanied, as always, by Forrest, the Endless Terror Taylor. And this is Slaughter Film, the weekly podcast devoted to reviewing the films that are legendary, even in hell.
And this time, it's a special all-bugs version of Slaughter Film. I'm doing the 1954 horror classic Them, and Corey is doing Bug.
Yes.
I don't know what year that
is. Not the one with the Judd chick.
Yeah, not the new one.
No, it's from 1975. It is actually about bugs.
Wow.
Unlike that other one that I mentioned that involves, like, radio bugs or something.
Yeah, it's a bait and switch. It's government tampering and wiretapping and shit like that. Not real creepy crawly bugs.
No.
So that's the one we're doing. We're doing one with creepy crawlies. not joining us today is our producer, John Lindvay, who
Liar!
Is... Well, he's here, but he's not... He's here in spirit because he just got back from PAX.
A haunting
and still,
spirit.
Yes.
Satan has my soul.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's the magic of radio.
Yeah, the spirit of radio. Ooh.
Oh. But, So I know you have a fun story to tell us, Corey.
Well, okay.
not pants related, but
I've mellowed down a little bit today because I started drinking beer a little while ago.
All right.
But I had one of those days that was we've all had this. As soon as your shift ends at whatever job you do, it's you know, it's one of those days and I had to fucking run to my car and get in and just drive as fast as I could home because I was gonna hurt somebody. It was just so frustrating. It was one of those days that if I was driving along home and I saw like some poor son of a bitch like walking in the rain, I would have pulled over and grabbed him by the head and stuck my fingers into his eye sockets and ripped out his eyes, and there, standing in the rain, bleeding from his eye sockets, he would have said, "God, why me?" And I would have said, because that's what type of day I had today, and it was just, I gotta blow off some steam. I'm sure people listening can identify with that. We've all had one of those days. It's like every one thing led to four other things, and I just wanted to, like, choke and stab. I wanted to take babies and put them in trash cans.
Damn.
But anyway.
Yes.
I guess what I've been doing over the past week is watching a shit ton of Herschel Gordon Lewis movies. I've stumbled some time ago onto a VHS series hosted by Joe Bob Briggs called The Sleaziest Movies in the History of the World. And I've been trying to collect them, and they're kind of hard to find. But recently I watched, or on eBay rather, I got Blood Feast.
Okay.
So I watched that one, and I watched a couple others that I've collected but hadn't watched yet. So I also saw Lucky Pierre, which is like a silent film, and it's really fucking goofy. And it's like slapstick comedy with boobs.
Wow.
And the one that really got to me was Suburban Roulette. It's about a couple with their daughter who move out of the big city to get rid of... to avoid their problems. They're trying to start new. He's an alcoholic. The wife is a chronic cheater.
All right.
And so they're like, well, we're going to move out of the city and find some place in the suburbs to raise our daughter, and we're going to change, and things are going to be good. But once they get there, they're preyed upon by a few households of wife swappers.
Oh.
So you want to talk about the sleaziest movies in the history of the world, this ranks up there. Because there's a scene where like the men are auctioning off their wives and shit. It's fucking wild.
Wow.
In a nutshell, that's what I've been doing.
Have you seen Blood Feast 2 yet? That's
yes.
The one that I have. Okay, you have seen that?
Yeah, like forever ago, I watched it with you.
Okay.
But alcohol was involved. That's maybe why you don't remember.
Okay. that is that all? Just
yeah.
Okay.
I've just been doing that, enjoying myself.
Fantastic.
How about you?
I've been busy with the Troma Power Hour. I'm not sure if I brought this up in the last one, but I'm making another Power Hour video, like the one that Corey's one that's on our website, and mine that is lost in the ether because it's not allowed on the internet or whatever. But
there's too much copyrighted material and wieners.
And wieners, yes.
I tried to get around that by calling mine a documentary.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because it does sort of chronicle the history of the slasher film. So when YouTube was like, you can't do this, I'm like, well, no, you do. I had to like write a response. You know, I'm like, it's a documentary that does stuff.
Call mine a documentary about random crazy shit. I mean, you can't say it's not a documentary about that.
Documentary about the crazy shit Forrest has seen with his eyes.
Yes, exactly. but I decided to make a new one. This one following the history of trauma. I'm taking trailers, all the trauma trailers, and cutting them up into 1 minute clips. And there's going to be 60 of them. And you know the rules. You know the score. This has been very difficult because trauma movie trailers are endlessly entertaining. Like, there could be a 3.5 minute trailer, and every second of that trailer is gold, and I don't want to lose any of it, but I had to figure out what was the best and what ones flowed the most, but it's been really tough. But I'm at a standstill now. I got all of my DVD trailers on there, because, you know, trauma movies, they have the trailer for the movie that it's the DVD for, and then they have, like, five trailers for other things, just completely different, you know? So I got all that stuff, and now I'm just at a standstill. I got your Corey's. I just got Corey's Monster in the Closet DVD, so now I got to put that in there. And our good friend Bork has a shitload of them. Like, he has Sizzle Beach USA and Beware Children at Play and Surf Nazis Must Die.
I just thought of another one that I have that you don't have.
What?
Redneck Zombies.
Oh, you have Redneck Zombies?
I didn't realize until right now.
Dude! History in the making,
I'll
right
bring
here.
It over.
Okay, thank you. So now I have Redneck Zombies also. All right, cool. Only problem is Bork's in Pittsburgh, so I've just been texting him, asking him like what he's got, and he says this and this and this, and I'm like, okay, can I borrow
hurry
it sometime?
Up, bring it.
And then yeah, his response is that'll be $482 or whatever the fuck he says. But yeah, this has been a blast. I'd say I'm about like a third done. Once I get yours and Bork's movies, I'll be probably about half done.
Yeah, I was just thinking of a couple more, like Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Wasn't there one like Grannies?
Rabid Grannies,
like?
Rabid yes. Grannies, I'm going to have that on there. Yes, it'll have both Mother's Day and Rabid Grannies. I've turned to Netflix. That's where I'm going to go next before I resort to finding them on the internet. I'm just going to – because Netflix has a thing called Coming Distractions, which is just like a previews from hell thing, but just for trauma. So I'm guessing that'll take care of most of my
stuff. Yeah, I would
stuff.
Think. Yeah.
So, yeah, in the next couple of weeks, or maybe next couple of months, who knows how the fuck long this will take, there will be a Trauma Power Hour, hopefully available, probably not on the internet, but, you know.
It'll chronicle all of trauma, it'll be a documentary.
It's a documentary about trauma, and we need those. I mean, it's important. But that's pretty much it. That's been occupying my entire time, so I have nothing else going on. My life is boring.
Well, I suppose I should interject with one piece of news.
Okay.
Before we get started here. Every now and then, Slaughter Film gets contacted by like a filmmaker or someone, and they're like, oh, we have a Kickstarter, check it out, and I don't have any fucking money. And Forrest doesn't have any fucking money. Oh. So what I thought we would do is if you visit our website on the right-hand column, we started a Kickstarter support group so that when we're contacted by these jerks about their movie, we were going to, you know, post something there. And then so our readers and listeners can check it out for themselves and, you know, we're kind of like passing the information along. And recently we got contacted by some people who are making a horror film called Peelers, which is about a group of psychomaniacs attacking a strip club. And in the video pitch, you know, on Kickstarter, they always have like a video that explains what the project is. They wanted to go for like a horror movie that's kind of smart and whatever. And I'm like, a smart horror movie? This sounds interesting. And it's in a titty bar. How titillating. I don't know. It sounded like a good idea. And so I was going to pass it along to anyone listening. Check out. Also, if this movie gets made, there's no way it won't make money because the poster art alone will fucking sell it.
Yeah.
It's really good. Check it out. It's on our website. There's a butt on it.
There's a butt on it.
Check
severed
it out. Leg. Yes. A severed stripper leg. But yeah, it's really good. Like, if I saw this in a movie rental place, I would definitely pick it up just because, like, it would catch my eye.
Right.
That alone would sell.
Well.
I guess that's all.
That's all. Well, that all said and done, big bugs. Everyone loves them, especially back in the 50s.
Big ones, small ones.
I was going to say,
I noticed there was like a trend like early on because they started to make bug movies in the 50s and it was like the atomic age.
Yeah.
So most of them were giant.
Yep.
And then later on in like the 70s or whatever, which my movie's from, they were weird or like mutated, or you know, they were normal bugs, but they were special because of a reason. But then later in the 90s, like arachnophobia, yeah, it was just the bugs just... themselves.
Yep.
Like, I don't know why it took so long for people to realize that people don't like bugs and they clearly creep people out where that's all you need.
Well, in the 50s, they're a metaphor for nuclear power and whatnot, so they had to be big because radiation makes stuff big. I don't know.
Right.
Them from 1954. I think it was the first big bug movie. I can't think of anyone that came before it.
By direction of the President of the United States, stay in your homes. I repeat, stay in your homes. Your personal safety, the safety of the entire city, depends upon your full cooperation with the military authorities.
Yes, cities, nations, even civilization itself, threatened with annihilation. Because in one moment of history-making violence, nature, mad, rampant, wrought its most awesome creation. For born in that swirling inferno of radioactive dust were things so horrible, so terrifying, so hideous, there is no word to describe them.
I don't know about, yeah, before it, but then right around that time you had Tarantula,
yeah,
Tarantula, Black Scorpion.
Mm-hmm. Those all came after. So this was the first one. And it's interesting, but for reasons that I will explain later on. But let's just dive right into this. The movie, which was originally supposed to be shot in color, but then they like cut the budget in half. So all the only thing that's in color in this is the title screen. Them is in like bright red and everything else is black and white, which is kind of weird.
That is lame.
Yeah, but
they should have made the trailer color just to like fool people.
That would have been a total bait and
if
switch.
If they're gonna cut, you know, a budget somewhere. Yeah.
So this movie takes place in New Mexico, and we follow a couple of cops driving down the road, and there's a spotter plane up in the air. They're looking for reports of a little girl is just like wandering through the desert. And sure enough, they find her. She's just wandering by herself, holding a doll with, like, it's a porcelain doll, so, like, half its head is, like, smashed off or whatever. And she looks scared out of her mind. They, you know, find the trailer where her family and her were vacationing at. And sure enough, it's all ripped apart. And there's, like, blood all over the place and everything. And the weird thing is, it's not bashed inward. The walls of the trailer are torn outward. So something grabbed onto it and ripped it up. And the other weird thing is that no money is stolen. The only thing that's stolen, the only thing that's broken into are their containers of, like, sugar packets. That's it. So somebody broke in, killed the family, and then stole all their sugar.
How are we going to make Christmas cookies now?
I know. So this leads them to a little tiny general store, a couple miles down the road. And sure enough, that's been broken into, too. And sure enough, the money's still there, but all the sugar is gone. In that store, they find the owner, who has been, his dead body's been thrown into, like, a storm cellar or whatever. And he's battered beyond all recognition, you know. Then the weird thing is, when they go back to the coroner and everything, the coroner says there are five ways that he could have died. His neck and back were both broken. His chest was crushed in. His skull was cracked. And time for the really weird one. He had enough formic acid in his body to kill 20 men. So, based on the formic acid, they decide to. And also based on a weird footprint they find, which doesn't look like a footprint for any kind of animal out there. They call in an animal expert, who is the typical 50s scientist character, some short little old foreign guy. And sure enough, his daughter, who's also a scientist, is a babe.
Yeah.
They also bring in an FBI guy. So they bring in two scientists and an FBI guy. And sure enough, the female scientist and the FBI guy share some playful banter and double entendre because it was the 50s and that's what always happened. The scientist guy gets right to work. They find that they talk to the little girl, but the little girl is catatonic. So he gets the idea to take a little glass and fill a little bit with formic acid and hold it over her nose, and maybe I think the smell will, like, trigger some sort of response. She smells the formic acid, and her response is to just scream a blood-curdling scream, and then shout, "Them!" and then run to the corner crying. It's one of the most famous, they said the title of the movie in, like, movie history.
Yeah,
right. So everything's leading up to a big mystery, and they decide to head out to the desert again and start searching, and sure enough, out in the desert, this weird, like, whistling noise starts. It's like a, it's almost like a chirping, but it's like really loud and echoey and creepy sounding. And that leads to the big reveal of them, which they're not, they're actually not revealed until about like 28 minutes into the movie, which is cool. I think it's a really neat little buildup because I guess when this movie, like this movie is almost 60 years old now, so everyone knows what the fuck they are. But I guess there was a big mystery campaign like in the ad for it and everything because the title is very cryptic, you know, yeah. Them, what the fuck is that? And I guess they never reveal that it's giant ants like in any of the original posters and any of the trailers or whatever. And the tagline, in a wonderful bit of being grammatically incorrect, the tagline was, whatever you do, don't let anyone tell you what them are. So I guess it was this big like mystery, which I thought was kind of cool because there's a real nice build up to it.
I'm sure, but while they were like writing that, they're like, "That's not right." Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Whatever. but now we all know because them, they're giant fucking ants. one of the giant ants shows up, scares the lady scientists, and then sure enough, the cops show up and machine gun the shit out of it until it's dead. And they ask scientist guy, is this it? Is it gone for good? And he's like, no, this one's just a scout. You know, ants, they travel in packs of hundreds or maybe even thousands. Then
the modern ant is still a mystery to us.
That's right. then comes the science-y stuff. They try to, like, figure out where these ants originated from. And sure enough, they originated in Alamo Gordo, New Mexico, which is where they actually tested the first atomic bomb during World War II. It's where they detonated the original atomic bomb.
Manhattan Project.
Yep. So sure enough, these ants were like a colony of ants that lived in the desert in that area, and they've been exposed to radiation for these past 9 years, and now they're giant because radiation is a magical thing.
I like how so many other Atomic Age movies had the same premise with radiation. Yeah. Like, they could all, in theory, be sequels.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to set them in the same area, they could be sequels.
I know. You're getting ahead of me here, actually, because there's a little bit of that in this movie, too. They talk about the ants, and they said that, you know, ants, they have a little, like, ant hole, sure enough. And the weird thing is...
Yeah, manhole.
Oh, no. No. And, you know, ants, regular ants, their nests can go down about, like, 30 feet or more, he said. So these ants, their hole could go down to, could be hundreds and hundreds of feet, you know. So, time to hop in a helicopter and go hunting for some ants. They go searching around, and sure enough, they find a giant anthill out in the middle of the desert, and they're like, well, how do we beat these things? We can't just like go in there and start like blast them. Do we bomb them? And he's like, no, because you know, they're buried hundreds of feet under the ground. They'll avoid your bombs easily. So they get the idea to launch some white phosphorus over the hill so that it makes the surface too hot for them to escape, and then throw in some nerve gas in there. And then after the nerve gas is cleared and everything, that somebody has to go down there and check to see that all the ants are dead and everything. And the cop, the FBI guy, and also the lady scientist go down there. And I like this movie because the female scientist is pretty capable, especially for a movie from the 50s. Like, at no point is she ever in, like, tattered clothes running away if the ants are trying to eat her, and, you know, some man's got to pick her up and shoot the ant away and everything. Yeah. She just says to him, you know, I'm the bug expert. You're going to need an expert down there in case, like, something goes wrong or something's up with the ants. You know, you need someone there to tell them what's going on. My father is old and incapable of doing that, so here I am. And the FBI guy's like, no, I'm not letting any woman down there. And she's like, I don't have time to give you a crash course on ant behavior. You know, you need somebody down there. It's like, yeah, that works. That's great, actually.
Yeah, because really back then, no matter what a woman's credentials were, like, they were still feeble somehow.
Yes. No time for female problems. So they head down into the nest, and sure enough, all the ants are dead. Like, the nerve gas actually worked. But when they get down to the queen's chambers, they find that two of the eggs have hatched, and they are the eggs of winged ants. And, you know, winged ants are future queens, and then the males, and, you know, the males, they mate, and then they die, so who cares about them? But the queens are the important ones. Right. So now they've got to find these two potential queens that are out there, and they start sending it, because they want to keep it under wraps, but at the same time, they want to try and get, like, tips from people. So they send out, like, please report strange smells, sudden like disappearance of sugar, weird, strange like kidnapping and murders of humans or livestock, and also like sightings of possible UFOs, quote unquote. And they get that from a crop duster in Texas who says he saw three UFOs that were shaped like ants. And sure enough, the guy's now in the loony bin. So they head down to ask him about that. And they find out that the ants, a queen and two males, are flying towards the East Coast. And sure enough, the queen ends up hiding out on a military ship, the USS Viking, which is like heading for Singapore. But fortunately, but unfortunately for the crew, like the ants started like coming out of the ship halfway to Singapore, and they killed everybody there, and then they had to sink the ship and everything. But that's like a sign, like, holy shit, if these ants get on a ship or whatever, they'll be all over the earth within a couple of years, and then goodbye human race. So they sunk the ship, so that takes care of one queen, but the second queen, they have no idea where it is. Through boring science-y and like detective work that takes up half the movie, but I'm not going to talk about it because it's just boring stuff. They find out that the ants have escaped to Los Angeles because they've taken, because you know, Los Angeles has those like vast sewer networks and everything underneath the storm drains and like right. that lead to like sewers. 700 miles worth, so that's like a perfect ant nest right there. When they get there, they find out that also, just to make things even more dire, some father and his two sons were playing with like a model plane out near those drains, and the ants showed up. The father tried to fight them off. He ended up getting killed, and the two kids have completely vanished. And through more investigating, they find out the kids are somewhere in those sewers too. So they can't just gas them out of there. You know, they got to actually send the army in and get them. The army comes down, and then this is like the big like action movie finale. They just come down. It's basically, you know, army guys and ants. Machine guns and flamethrowers are involved heavily, and sure enough, they rescue the kids, and then through more investigation, they find the giant nest with all like the potential. It's like three winged like queen ants in there laying eggs and everything like that, and they blast them all with flamethrowers. And the last line, which is, you know, the last line of these 50s movies was always some dire warning. They yeah. said, I just wonder if this was created by the first atomic bomb. What about all the other atomic bombs you detonated over the years? I mean, there could be lots more out there. And then it's like, uh-oh, foreshadowing, which could very easily lead to every single giant monster movie since then.
Godzilla.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, like, Godzilla came out, I think, in Japan a couple of months after this came out. And that monster was created, I think, by the Hiroshima bombing, which is also in 1945. So I'm going to officially say that Godzilla is an unofficial sequel to them.
Godzilla should have fought giant ants.
Yes. Although Godzilla would have whooped their asses, because these ants, they're giant, but they're only like 9 feet tall or
well,
like 9 feet long
like
or whatever.
A lot of them.
That's true.
So instead of us being covered by normal sized ants, it'd be like Godzilla being
yeah,
covered by
it would
shit
be
ton.
Like an iguana fighting normal sized ants yeah. just all over. That could work. Let's do it. Godzilla versus ants.
All right, sci-fi.
All right. I love this movie. I first saw this when I was a little kid, and it scared the shit out of me. Though that weird like whistling noise that the ants make that always signal their arrival
yeah,
is
weird.
Very, very creepy. And this movie was very influential, not just in like big bug stuff, but even in like nowadays. I was saying to you when you came in, and I was still watching the end of it. A lot of it, I think, like influenced James Cameron for Aliens, because like the very beginning, yeah. the little girl, like the traumatized girl, and I noticed how like. She had a doll with its head missing, and in Aliens, the little girl had just a doll's head. I'm not sure if that's a reference or if it's just a coincidence. the whole idea of, like, killing the queen and killing the eggs or else they're going to be back and everything, you know? Like,
well, not to talk shit on him because he does make good movies, but, yeah. like, he did kind of borrow ideas for Terminator and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So.
But I'm not sure if he was directly influenced by them, but I hope so, because Them is awesome and Aliens is awesome, and yeah. I would like to see them, like, sort of, well, one sort of subtly referencing the other, you know. And just the whole idea of these, like, soldiers going into the nest, and, like, the scientist lady points out that the nest is made with saliva. They stick all the dirt together with saliva and everything, which is just right out of Aliens also. And yeah. also it's what real ants do. So maybe he just based it off of the life cycle of ants, you know?
Well, yeah, the alien, well, I guess I don't know how much alien or aliens had to do with it, but they are very, the aliens themselves are very bug-like.
Yeah, insect-like.
Their hierarchy and yeah. stuff like that.
Right. So that's pretty much all I got to say. Oh, one more thing, though. One piece of film history that will go on forever and ever in legacy.
For some reason.
Yes, this is one of the first movies to incorporate the Wilhelm scream. If you don't know what the Wilhelm scream is, just listen to it, and we'll probably put a soundbite of it in here. It started in the 50s. It was some 1950s Western that came out the year before them.
Yeah.
The guy's name was Wilhelm. They were like, Wilhelm, go check that out. And then Wilhelm did, and then he got shot with an arrow. And he did a scream that no human being has ever done or could ever do in real life. And then they archived that, and then I guess they used it again for them. And then 23 years later, George Lucas, because he was a fan of those old school movies, he incorporated it in Star Wars. And now every movie that features a scream has the Wilhelm scream in some way or another.
That's the thing. Like, I don't understand. Like, how much does it cost to send somebody in front of a microphone and tell them to scream?
I don't know.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, to keep recycling the same noise, it doesn't sound natural, and it's so recognizable. Like, yeah. I just don't understand. Unless people, like directors or whatever, like, yeah, use the Wilhelm scream. It'll be neat.
Well, I think Lucas did it because, like, Star Wars was supposed to be a reference to those old movies, so that was kind of like a jokey thing. And yeah. then Star Wars was so influential, and everyone else like, I want that scream that was in Star Wars. You know.
It's got that Star Wars flair.
Yeah. But you were saying there was another scream, and I
don't know the name of it.
But I if I heard it, I would know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's like
the sound of it just yeah, like it gets like higher pitched and trails off at the end, and it's in trailers, it's in movies, it's in
Again,
video games.
No human being could ever scream like
Why
that.
Use that? Is it really that cheap? You know what I mean? Like anyone, like whoever's editing it and putting that soundbite in, could just scream and it would be better. I don't understand.
But it's camp. It's kitsch.
Well, now it is.
Yeah. So them is awesome for giving us big bugs and for popularizing the Wilhelm scream.
This is true.
And I recommend it totally. It's less cheesy than the other Big Bug movies, because Big Bugs just by themselves are inherently cheesy, just because they're giant bugs. I mean, but this one, like I said, the whole like mystery element to it in the beginning, the first like 28 minutes are a big build up to it and everything. It feels classier. So I don't know. I think it still holds up really well. So that's that. 60 years later, and giant ants are still cool. That's all I got to say. So I know nothing about your movie.
I didn't until I watched it. So,
okay.
It was one of those movies that I never heard of, but I saw it at Big Lots for $3. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fuck
not?
It. Yeah. And we, you know, a couple weeks ago we started talking about like a bug theme. And I'm like, yeah, I should dig that movie out, blow the dust off and check it out. And I popped it in. And I'm like, this is kind of boring, but it gets wild.
Okay. It's Herschel Gordon Lewis, so I expected
no,
it.
No,
to...
that one isn't.
Or no, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm
it's,
sorry.
It's
yeah.
William Castle.
William Castle. Thank you.
Yeah.
I got the two confused.
Well,
because
we were
talking
about
him.
Yeah.
But still, William Castle, he's the king of the gimmicks. I mean.
Well, he's worked on films like House on Haunted Hill and stuff,
yeah.
but also... The Tingler,
yes,
which it was a movie about a thing or whatever, but people would go to see it in the theaters, and he had mounted underneath, you know, seats here and there, like these little buzzers.
Percepto.
That would kind of they would kind of vibrate. So during certain points of the movie, they would go off, and regardless what you know any viewers were experiencing. All of a sudden, now in the theater with you, you have people screaming because they're under your seat. You know, this thing, the Tingler, is after you, you know? Which is actually funny. This was the last film he worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously about bugs. So he wanted to get these, like, brushes that move installed on some of the chairs so that people would feel them, like, on their leg or whatever periodically through the film. And surprisingly enough... No theater owner went for it because the last thing they wanted was their patrons to think that the fucking theater was covered in bugs. Surprise, surprise. Don't go to that theater. We'll bring roaches home. No, we don't want that. So, yeah. Didn't happen.
So did it have a gimmick?
Well, I think that was supposed to be the gimmick.
Oh, so he just went without a gimmick. That seems not right. A William Castle movie without a gimmick. Oh.
Well, and even then, it's not very original because he already did that with the Tingler.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Tingler light. So okay.
Yeah. Well, that's this movie. It was directed by Jeanette Zwark, I guess.
Oh, Jeanette Zwark. Excuse me.
Sure.
He directed Jaws 2.
Yeah. And Supergirl.
That's right.
Yeah, which that's kind of... but I guess he's been busy recently with shows like Supernatural and Bones and Fringe and stuff. So
cool. Okay.
Good for you. And this was also based on a book, which I have to imagine the book did the material a better service than the movie does. It was written by Thomas Page, just because in a book you have time to explain stuff. This movie has a lot of explaining... And not so much bugs doing stuff until the last 5 minutes.
Right.
I was very happy, but I'll talk more about that in a while. And the film that I'm going to be talking about is Bug from 1975.
It was a day like any other. The air hung heavy with the heat. Then it happened. A crack in the land that reached to the very bowels of the earth itself, spitting out the fires of hell. And the gleaming black bug that had no eyes and looked like a rock. It traveled in the exhaust pipes of cars, making fire, killing, and infesting the land with a burning terror.
So let's dive into it.
All right.
Our story begins in a sleepy Midwest farming community on a sunny Sunday afternoon as a bunch of town folk are assembling for church service, which, by the way, the pastor or priest or whatever it is, he starts talking about all the sins in our country, and if we were to pull out a map and circle on it, like every time, everywhere there was a rape or a murder, that their area of the country would be like the only holy safe place. So he's carrying on, which this is a subtle theme throughout the movie, but I don't really know if it has anything to do with anything. I imagine it might be touched on more in the book.
Uh-huh.
But in this scene, it seems really strong, like science versus religion, or
right.
But then it fizzles out. Uh-huh. But anyway, all this violence and rape talk is interrupted by an earthquake, which almost collapses the church on its people. The earthquake opens a fissure that allows prehistoric subterranean cockroaches to come to the surface. You would think, being a bug movie, they would come out in droves and meddle with shit and hurt people, which is kind of true, but you don't see any of that because apparently they had a budget on this movie.
Oh.
So as a few days pass, the town tries to repair the earthquake damage, and in the midst of all this, an arson takes to the streets, burning apartment buildings and businesses to the ground, and even setting fire to cars and things. Meanwhile, Professor James Parmeter, which, by the way, I just want to say something. Like, Parmeter is kind of an odd name. If you're making up a fictitious name, why wouldn't it just be Jones or something?
Yeah.
You know, it's
the original.
the actor's real name is simpler than Parmeter. Bradford Dillman.
Dr. Dillman would have been awesome.
He's a local professor and scientist.
Ooh.
So he has his various degrees on his wall framed, and he dusts them regularly. Once he becomes aware of the bugs that, you know, the earthquake unleashed, he sets out to investigate them, and after collecting a few, he discovers that they're actually the cause of the fires. In a similar way that crickets rub their legs together to make that chirping noise,
yeah.
They start fires and then eat the ash. Yeah, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Uh-huh.
But he holds one of these cockroaches up. And naturally, it's huge. It's like a Madagascar cockroach or something. But its ass, you see like lightning between its two little jobbers, right? So it's like a taser. It's really weird.
Taser bugs. I love it.
And I'm like, okay. he also discovers that the bugs are slow moving, even though they're kind of designed to run fast like a cockroach.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're slow moving and disoriented, he assumes through some watching of them, that it's due to low pressure on the Earth's surface because they're from deep down in the Earth's core or whatever. So that essentially they have the bends, so they're all wackadoo. God only knows if they were running fast and eating my corn puffs, they would set fires all over the place. But because of this, they're slowly dying and could become extinct. So now he wants to like learn as much as he can. So while he's poking around with the firebugs, as they come to be known as, trying to get them to mate so that he can learn, because that's always a good idea.
Yeah.
The townspeople are left to fight off the bugs themselves. A father and son burn to death in a truck once the bugs cause it to burst into flames. A young girl answers a phone, and one of the firebugs is on the receiver, and it like crawls up to her ear.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's really weird.
What?
Between this movie being kind of boring, it's got like some really shocking visuals. Like it's on her ear and she's screaming and there's smoke coming out of her ear and there's also blood dripping out of it. It's wild. Even James's wife tangles with a bug herself when it crawls up the back of her shirt and sets her hair on fire. And again, we're going from really boring. She's sitting there reading like a recipe in her kitchen to head on fire, running around her house, setting drapes and everything else on fire. And she dies. So the death of his wife causes James to lose touch with reality. He spends day and night caring for this recently hatched second generation of firebug. You know, he reads to them, you know, bedtime stories and stuff. He takes them for walks. He even went to the carnival and got them cotton candy.
Oh, right.
Well, in reality, he's like recording, now they're doing this and it must be because they're, you know, an advanced race of firebug, and, you know, he's just like taking notes to be sciencey.
Right.
He even names the bugs after him.
That's adorable.
Well, this love affair takes a turn for the weird when one night James wakes up to find a few of the bugs eating him.
What?
Yeah. They get out of their cage. He discovers they're meat eaters.
Well, obviously.
A few of them got out, and they started to eat the steak he was preparing. And then he grabs his little microphone, and he starts taking notes again. And he's like, yeah, it seems that they will eat meat, raw meat, any meat. What the fuck do you mean, any meat?
Yeah.
You saw them eat beef once. So later that night, he wakes up. He was, like, in bed shirtless, and there are, like, four or five on his chest, and there's, like, smoke coming out and blood dripping, and this alarms him, understandably.
Right.
So he doesn't do what most people would do, like get up and swear and put him back in the cage, or, you know, you go squish now and smash them all to retaliate. He gets like kind of weird and childish and sort of sadistic. He has a pressurized tank that he had him into to mate because of the pressure, so it would make him healthy again.
I see. Yeah.
But he puts him in there and cranks it all the way up. And this is when he learns that the bugs have like a hive mind, because the ones in the pressurized tank start to writhe around in pain, and then he looks over and all the other ones are too. So they're like psychically connected.
That's really weird, but
it is weird. I told you this movie gets weird. But the weird doesn't stop there, you see. The following night, he wakes to hear like a rustling noise or whatever, and he sits up in his bed and turns the light on, and on the wall across from him, there are a bunch of these bugs on the wall, and they spell out his name.
Whoa,
and he's
what?
Like, oh, my God. Oh, no, they're so smart. I've gone too far. And then like they rearrange themselves to spell out, we live. And I'm like, this is fucking weird. So not only do they know English,
yeah,
they know how to like communicate psychically to each other and start fires and eat people, but setting fires and eating people, taking a backseat to telekinesis and this idiot professor.
This got really weird. You're right.
It's fucking weird. So the bugs at this point, because he's like freaking out and doesn't know what to do. They're smarter than me. What do I do? The bugs transport their freshly laid third generation egg sacs back into the crevasse that they originated from. We're coming up on the last 5 minutes of the
really?
Movie. Yes. All of that shit drug on, and it was like just barely.
Seems like the beginning of the movie when the bugs start communicating.
It's the first hour in like 25 minutes of this thing is. It just creeps along, and you're learning science that isn't real science because this bug doesn't exist and no one really gives a shit. Like, okay, we have arsons. These bugs are getting crawling around, getting on things, starting fires. Very little of the movie's about that. And, like, the last 5 minutes are the 5 minutes that I wish the whole movie was about because now James hears a noise coming from the fissure outside. He goes outside to investigate, and out of the fissure erupts the third generation, and they are fireflies.
Ah.
So now they have wings, and they're like the size of softballs, and they start attacking him. And then it becomes sort of like birds. He's trapped inside his house. That's what the fuck the whole movie should have been, instead of this crap. Soon they smash through the windows. They set James on fire. He stumbles into the hole. The hole closes up, and that's the end of the movie. The fucking credits roll.
That's it. Wait, what?
No! Nope, that's it.
He just got to the most interesting stuff.
Oh, we ran out of money.
Wow.
I think we shot it, like, we wasted a bunch of film early on.
How long was this movie? It seems like they...
It was a full-length movie.
Oh, okay.
And it was boring. I got halfway through and I thought, I'm like, how's this going to end? Because it seems like this is really late. It's not... The acting's good. The special effects, like the fire stuff, is fine. Yeah. The bugs themselves are just cockroaches until they turn into fireflies.
Yeah.
And then they're fucking just really bad puppet things. They're, like, thrown around, and their wings are made of plastic, and you can tell they're plastic, and they don't move while they're flying through the air.
It's just some stagehand throwing them at the people.
Oh, my God.
I kind of want to see it now just to see that.
Just go to the last, like, 15
minutes. Fake bugs just being launched at the actor.
Yeah. Go to the last 15 minutes and you'll understand the whole movie. I mean, the parts that are boring aren't necessarily bad. They just don't fucking need to be there. And I feel that a lot of the exposition in the book, they try to jam as much of it as possible into the movie, and I don't know why, because it's not fucking necessary. I want to see bugs attack people. I don't want to see some sweaty man in his apartment talking to a microphone about bugs that aren't doing nothing. That's not interesting. That might work on for some, like, you know, radio drama, but this is visual medium. This is film. I want to see something happening. This movie would make for an interesting remake.
Yeah, it sounds like
it. Because if you just took the idea of the earthquake, you know, opening up the earth and then the bugs come out,
yeah,
that's an okay idea. And the fact that they evolve is a pretty good idea. And the fact that they fucking attack people is a great idea. As long as there isn't a main character talking about fucking nothing for an hour while other people worry about him. Because he hasn't left his apartment. He's just with those bugs. Meanwhile, no one else catches on that, like, there are bugs burning stuff.
Yeah.
They just wonder, oh, this house burned. That's weird. There's a lot of houses burning. What about these bugs? Man, that earthquake was something. Dum-de-dum. I hope Dr. James, what's his face, figures this out soon. Dum-de-dum.
Wow. Sounds like you really love this movie.
It was only $3, so I can't complain.
I gotcha.
I've been wanting to watch more 70s movies anyway.
Yeah.
So, but it's really unnecessary.
Watch Empire of the Ants. You haven't seen that yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, check that out.
That's H.G. Wells.
Yeah, it's original. Based on H.G. Wells. Yeah. Yep. But
that's what I should have reviewed, but no. I wanted to be different. You were doing the big bug
that's
thing.
That's true. You can't
I
do
wanted to
two
do the weird
ants.
Bug thing. Yep. And we have arachnophobia, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe we'll get around to that someday.
Yeah, Empire of the Ants taught young Forrest about morality.
You were telling me.
Yeah, there's a scene in the movie where a guy and a girl are running away, and the girl gets caught on, like, some branches, and the guy just takes off, and the girl gets killed by the ants. And then there's another scene where it's another guy and girl running away, and the girl gets stuck, and the guy goes to rescue her, and then he gets stuck, and then he gets killed by the ants. Now, in my little brain, I was like, oh, he died, but he was the good guy because he saved her. And the other guy is alive, but he's bad because he let the girl die. I get it.
The good guy died honorably.
Yes.
Preserving her honor.
That was an eye-opening experience to, like, however the fuck old I was, like, four or whatever I saw.
See, the key is to in life to balance good and bad so that you don't die and you get to help the girl, but then you also live and maybe sleep with the girl.
There you go.
Tread lightly on both.
That's the end goal of everything.
You know? Stay alive and have as much sex as you can.
Even when there's giant ants. Scratch that, especially when there's giant ants.
Maybe we can teach them to let us ride on them, and then we can have sex on them.
Wow, this is taking a turn for the weird, much like that movie.
Yeah, I would actually love to see something where we have giant... It seems like a cartoon idea, I know, but if we have giant insects and we ride them and do stuff, like I can imagine a farm being plowed by a couple ants or whatever, flies drive us or fly us across country to vacation, visit relatives.
I want to live in giant bug world.
Although that would be weird, because the flies would land and be like, no, we're not there yet, and then they would just like puke up stuff and then re-eat it. Last wow. time we take United Fly Airlines.
All right, we got to move on to something else.
We have comments.
Yes, I heard. I heard we have a lot of comments, actually.
One of our lovely YouTube followers, Werewolf of Dawn, commented, your podcasts are so interesting and give me information I never knew, and I'm a very, very passionate horror fan. Keep it up.
Thank you.
I love those ones that are just like kind of generic but really positive.
Yeah,
I like that.
That made my day. Cool.
Matthew Stewart says, when it comes to Lynch, referring to David Lynch from the past podcast, I think there's a lot of film critics that look at a little too much into his film. Sure, there's plenty of symbolism, but sometimes you just need to watch the film like you would a painting at an art gallery. Enjoy it for what it is. Lynch's later work, starting with Lost Highway, were pretty much just fever dreams, but nonetheless good ones.
Yes. I think I mentioned that in my Inland Empire review. That's what I like about his stuff. His stuff is a lot like conceptual art. You just sit there and watch it, and what you get out of it might say more about you than it might say about the person who made the movie, you know? And I like that, but that's the kind of stuff that I'm into, so.
We have another commenter who disagrees somewhat. Let's see if we can make him fight.
Uh-oh.
Mark says, first, oh no, mention of Serbian film, which I just kind of threw out there.
Hey.
Last time. Now I'm depressed.
Oh.
Sadly, I can't enjoy the movies of David Lynch. As they say, they take you out of your comfort zone and just weird me out. I guess I just like a little narrative and cohesion in my movies. But he also asks, have you done the MST3K Riff Tracks thing? Which, no, we haven't, you and I. But we should.
Like make our own riff
yes.
tracks?
Yes.
Oh, dude.
We've been talking about it off and on for a while. But
yes.
We need to plan it. We need to get organized.
Yeah. Sorry, we're busy and have weird schedules. So.
And lazy.
And also are lazy, yes.
Then, Cinema Sickness says, I love a good cheesy horror film. In fact, I prefer them that way, but even I had to turn. Even I had a hard time watching Leprechaun in Space. Love all the others in the franchise.
I want to see Leprechaun in the Hood. Like, yeah. I have to see Warwick Davis rapping.
Well, like, Leprechaun in Space was such a chore to watch to review. Like, it made me not want to, like, watch any other Leprechaun movie ever. But I think at some point I will have to buckle down and just do it. I'll just rent them all and sit down and watch one after another. I'll hide all the, like, sharp knives and pills and whatever I have in my house so I don't kill myself afterwards. But yeah,
wow.
I'll do it.
All right. Good luck, sir. I guess that's it.
Yes.
Is there any other news that we need to,
We will soon, don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with the website Letterboxd.
Yes. I knew there was something else we had to say.
We just made an account, but we don't have anything on it yet, but it's something you guys should check out because any of you who are cinephiles like we are, you can use it to keep track of the films that you watched and rate them and stuff. And there are a lot of fun, like, little gadgets and shit that, like, say you watch a bunch of Christopher Nolan movies. Of his whole career, they list like the percentage of movies that you've watched by him and stuff, like all these little like facts and information that you wouldn't have thought of, but it's kind of like a neat way to keep track of the movies you've seen and what you thought of them. I don't know. There's just like a lot of information that you get you get back. But all you have to do is like look up the name of the movie, really. I mean, you don't have to like review it, maybe rate it.
Right.
You know, see, I mean, well, you can review it and do all that.
If
but,
you want to.
But we're going to be doing that. So if you want to check out what we've been watching, even stuff that maybe we don't talk about, but, you know, we can share other thoughts on other films. Check that out. We'll have it on our website soon, a link to that.
Mm-hmm. And there will be a Slaughter Film one, and there also Corey and I will have our own like personal Letterboxd stuff. So
this is true.
You can see what we think of personally and then what Slaughter Film as a whole thinks of stuff. So, yay!
Follow them!
Yeah, follow us.
Follow us. We have cookies.
Thank you. just come. Come into my van.
Yes.
Got your candy.
Got your sweet treats. Such a sweet treat.
Well, on that note,
I do cocaine.
Be sure to check out our website, slaughterfilm.com. We have news and reviews, but not cocaine.
And make sure to leave any questions or comments on our website, our YouTube, our Facebook, or even email us at slaughterfilm@hotmail.com.
Later.
Yeah.
This edition of Slaughter Film has been brought to you by our producer, John Linvay, introduced by me, Ricky Morrow, and music by Xeno Genocide.